Blog Talk Radio.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive, and we don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 one is shot, who's to blame? Headlines, front page, and rap, the name. MC's the light here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Kill the brother's life with a knife, that's cried, cause he died of trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, cause that's
gangsta.
can't believe me, that is no fun. The time is now to unite everyone. You don't have to be soft to be for peace. Robbing and killing and murdering is the least. You don't have to be chained by the beast. But party people, it's time I release.
Hey yo, here's the situation. Idiocy, nonsense, violence. Not a good policy, therefore we must ignore fighting, busting. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together before we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another, it broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulties, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave for what I'm saying, or we'll all be on our knees praying.
The heavy beat, deep in the heart of the matter. The self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, but there's a vet still a duck. There's no one around, cause in jail you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction. Yes, we urge to merge. We live for the love of our people, the hope they get along. Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
Boy, so we gotta rise.
Instead in your head, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect. To revolve, to evolve the self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check, or else it's
self-destruction. All right, royalty. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Motivational Classroom. I'm your host, Hugo the Seventh Oracle. And today, guys, we're going to, I want to introduce to you guys the book of the month, okay? This is something that I've been wanting to do for a while, right? And then Divine, at Spring Bash to kind of introduce, well, to introduce, rather, book of the month, okay? Today's book of the month is going to be by Manly P. Hall. He's an awesome author, you guys. Manly P. Hall. I suggest for any of you to binge on his books. Manly P. Hall, he tells a lot about the universe. One of my favorites is when he breaks down the astrological ages, you know, different, like the age of Aries, war, age of Pisces, what we just came out of, the self-destructive, you know what I mean? Aspect, but we have to understand a lot of things on why things happen in Pisces age and so on, you know. I encourage you guys to always do your own research, but psychic self-destruction, you know, that was actually kind of a new one for me, because I was like, I knew about psychic self-defense, and I knew the effects that it could have on you and your psyche. And as we know here at EAR, because we're no stranger to research, right, that a lot of this shit in the dome, if you will, that we are trapped in, well, that many of us had come accustomed to being trapped in, okay, let me just put it like that, because, again, we are in a shift to where a lot of things are changing, and they're changing on a cosmic level. And with that being said, you know, it's things that we can no longer go against or ignore. We can choose to, right? But psychic self-defense, as well as psychic self-destruction, in which we're talking about today, well, he's going to break down his book. But I got halfway through it, and I paused because I said, I want to say this one, because you guys, Enhancing Awareness Radio, it, as the founder and producer of this platform, I love to learn and grow with you guys, like, live. You know what I mean? I just never have been one of those who wanted to just teach all the time. You know what I'm saying? So my platform is based on learning and education and growing together with the collective mind. You know what I mean? With the collective mind. A lot of stuff I've been through, a lot of stuff I know, but there is a lot of stuff that I don't, and I'm still, you know, student first, you know what I mean? So on this one, I halted it because I wanted to just kind of learn with you guys. as far as what he's talking about when it comes to psychic self-destruction, okay? So that's what we're going to be doing here today, guys. I hope you guys are doing wonderful in your own personal lives. I hope you guys are enjoying the energy of balance, the energy of chaos, as well as I know the universal, on a universal level. I'm going to pull a card for you guys to close out the show, too. But I know on a universal level that, on a universal level, you guys. Oh, okay. I'll pull right now, guys. So love begins, right? Where does love begin with you? All right, this is the card number three, right, which is divine teacher. Love begins. Where does love truly begin with you, right? Where has it ever begun? Even though many of us say that, I guess people with good hearts are chosen, if you will, yet what, you know, there's just something in me that just says we all have good hearts, you know what I mean, but just have utilized it on many different levels, you know what I mean? Like we kind of choose to turn that off, right? So this is about higher knowing. This is about inspiration. So love begins. It's just for you to self-evaluate, like where does love begin with you? So that's the card that I pulled. I wanted to share that with you guys. Love begins. Love begins when the Most High gives you that second chance. You know, what if love begins? How does it look for you? All right? And if you guys want to book a session with me, you guys can utilize my link tree in the show notes, or you can email the platform, which is enhancingawarenessradio@gmail.com. But again, Manly P. Hall, Psychic Self-Destruction, and it says, release the mind from regret. And the link to the audiobook is going to be in the video credits, which is also in the show notes. So you can reference off of that to get the author if need be. But as you guys know, I'll be out, you know, periodically to close out. Oh, this lecture was done November 16th, 1980. Oh, wow. Okay, November 16th, 1980. Wow. I was born in 83, y'all, so 1980. Okay, so let's listen together, you guys. Again, this is entitled Psychic by Manly P. Hall. It's about 1 hour and 23 minutes. All right? All right, guys. I'll be back to close.
Good thoughts are very important things. And in the talk of this morning, we want to call attention to an old Buddhist philosophy, which perhaps isn't as well known in the West. Buddha told his followers very definitely that this world is a school. It is not a playground. Also, we come to school to learn. And life is a process of learning. No one expects to stay in school forever, nor do they expect to remain in the same grade of a school for a very long time. Life is growth, unfoldment, and we are born into this world largely because of the fact we need growth. We need self-unfoldment. We need to learn the virtues and integrities that are essential to the final destiny of all created things. Therefore, the fact that we may have certain shortcomings and make mistakes along the way, as these circumstances should be accepted for their soul growth powers. They help us to grow. No one in the world can go from the cradle to the grave without making some mistakes. We will always do things that we may regret. We will make mistakes. We will make false decisions. We will come into violent conflicts with other people all the way along through life. Our mistakes are not the problem. It's what we do about them that is the real heart and soul of the subject. Therefore, as we look back upon the occurrences of a confused existence, we must not permit the mind to become associated too intimately with regrets, with self-criticism, or with any attitude which frustrates further and future growth. If we look back over our lives, sometimes we almost wish that we could have a good attack of amnesia and forget the whole thing. It might make us more comfortable at the moment, but it would leave us faced with problems we have not solved. We must not only solve the problems of our environment, we must solve the problems within ourselves. And these inner problems are sometimes the most painful of all. Let us imagine for a moment that we look back over the years of life and we pick out three or four conditions for which we were responsible or for which we think we were responsible and have gotten into difficulties that simply cannot be easily erased from the memory. As long as the person has a mind and a memory, it will continue to function. We must live with our memories just as we live with every other circumstance of living. Therefore, the problem is not how can we forget, but rather how we can capitalize on the liabilities in our own past. We have to find out what these things mean. Once we get the meaning, we then can more or less nullify the exact memory itself. We can look back upon a situation and we say it was very difficult, but it has brought about a deeper understanding of life. It has given us values, and these values must also be remembered. If we remember only the mistake and do nothing to think about our own reactions to these situations, we can become extremely neurotic. There are tragedies which for many persons are greater than they can bear. There seems to be no...
A good note on that, right? First, there is Dr. Bruce Lipton, right? And he breaks down understanding the subconscious mind. Very important. And then outside of Dr. Bruce Lipton, we got Wayne Dyer, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, right? So subconscious mind, learning how to shift your thoughts, right, as far as the negative mind being on autopilot and catapulting into reprogramming and transforming your mind. Manly P. Hall is helping us with the awareness of how we allow our own psyche to be our own demise and self-destruction. And it doesn't have to be that way. I'm loving this already, guys.
Possible hope of changing patterns that were set many years ago.
That's what I wanted to say. That one of the most important things that I remember in my very own journey is life is only 10% of what happens, and yet 90% in how you react to it. We are the creators, remember that, right? So if we are reacting always in a low vibratory mindset, guess what life we're going to create for ourselves? And that's on the subconscious. All right, see why the subconscious is important? All right.
And which have more or less overshadowed our lives from that time on. To work with this, we must, to a sense, at least, become religion-oriented, philosophy-oriented, and psychology-oriented. We have to begin the process of untangling the circumstances which have hurt and offended us. One of the ways, of course, in which some psychologists operate is to make us continually think about these problems until we can no longer energize them. But this process is sometimes attended by unusual dangers. It is much better to approach our own past in a more or less scientific manner. and try to discover ways of working through a situation. Going back to when it occurred, for example, we should estimate ourselves 15, 20, 50 years after we have made the mistake, we are no longer the same person. Life has changed us. Life has brought us new enlightenments, new opportunities, new relationships. And therefore, we are today a new person. The person that made the mistake is no longer alive. The person who made the mistake has gradually been transformed into a better person. If we were not better persons, we would not regret the mistake. Having found that we are now a new person, we can begin to understand what we were when the incident occurs. We must not isolate the circumstance itself. We must not take the attitude that today we would make the same mistake that we made then. The fact that we regret, that we wish we could change the situation, proves that we have grown. And from the position of a new growth, we ought to be able to understand the person of long ago who did not have that growth. Thus, we cannot take our present condition and say that is how we should have acted many years previously. We are new people. We have new insights. We have better understanding. Therefore, we must consider for a moment the understanding that existed when we made the mistake. We have to realize the circumstances in our own thinking and our own emotions. Very often, the mistakes that we regret were made in our younger years. Most of the mistakes that have come to me for solution have occurred in lives before they had reached their 30th year. Perhaps an early broken home. Perhaps a failure of moral incentives and directives way back when we were young. We must judge, then, the entire problem in the view of what we were when it happened. If we were unexperienced, if we were without proper guidance at that time, if we were brought up in an environment which was adverse to our best interests, we have to realize that those were the factors and circumstances that made the mistake. We were just not as grown up as we have become since. When we weigh the possibility of putting ourselves back to that other time, we must not include the decisions we would make today. We must not expect that we have the ability, the skill, the experience, and the integrity decisions which we can make now after perhaps half a lifetime of careful thinking and new opportunities for learning and self-analysis. So begin by seeing how responsible you were at the time you made the mistake. If at that time you were young, you were without much strength of background. You were living in a world in which mistakes are the order of the day. And therefore, begin to analyze the problems that you faced then in the light of what you were then instead of what you are now. Also, think carefully as to the gradual consequences of the incidents themselves. Did this mistake help you to grow up? Were you a stronger person after you made the mistake? Did you learn something you've never forgotten that was useful? Have you dedicated yourself to making no more actions of that kind or quality? Are you now able to sit down and look at yourself as a separate person, person who was then in a condition, situation, crisis, emergency, for which you were not equipped? Also, what has the mistake done to you, or what have you done to the mistake? If you have gotten into a difficulty many years ago, you must realize that that difficulty is now no longer a vital reality. In many instances, the very circumstances you regret most are no longer regretted by anyone else except yourself. The circumstances in all these lives have changed, and therefore the main regret lies in the memory, in the record in your own nature, a record of guilt, a record of deceit, a record of violence. Any one of these and many other situations live on only in you. You may, however, also be faced with another circumstance. Looking back, you may realize that the mistake you made damaged innocent people. This is always one of the most difficult things to face. But the damage was done, and you do not know for certain but that those persons so damaged also received an important lesson, which perhaps they were years in growing up. The mistakes that we make, therefore, have to be regarded as part of an unfolding growth pattern. We regret many things historically.
So, with that being said, what he just pointed on, the mistake, what we perceive, right, because everything is about perception, but what we perceive as mistakes, what's his name, Eckhart Tolle, the book is called A New Earth. If you want to shift your ego, if you want to learn how to balance your ego, go get that book. It's called A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And I mean by the book. I'm talking no audio. I'm talking by the book, dissect it. I'm talking literally, it's like the Bible of the ego, okay? And not to diminish the ego, but to understand why we needed it or need it in order to navigate even this earth plane or to survive, right? Forgot where the hell I was going with this. Where was I going with that? Let's see.
Okay. Nations regret. Races regret.
There it is. So everything, mistakes, you know, things that happen to us, you know, that we perceive, that we blame others for, what if there are greater lessons in that? You know, if we grew up in a abusive household, you know, and we just, you hit me or you beat me, but that's not a good example because I wasn't brought up like that. But we're just going to listen. How about that?
Individuals regret. But out of these regrets, ultimately, there is a powerful experience of soul consciousness. That you can regret, that you can be sorry, proves that a higher degree of unfoldment is gradually taking place within yourself. Taking these...
Instead of thinking, what is this life? What has life done to me? What is life teaching me, right? What is life teaching me? I'm sorry, guys. I'm just excited about this one. This is a good one.
Shadows of past things. You must gradually impersonalize them. You must face the simple fact that you cannot change what has happened. Therefore, if it is a liability, you have to some way transform it into an asset in your own consciousness. You must learn from what happens. Now, in most religious systems, there is what is called penance, a process of repenting or a process of exhausting the evil of a situation by sincere and practical regret. Therefore, the possibility of penance arises wherever difficult situations arise. It may well be that you can reconcile or correct the situation itself if it has not endured too long. But if this is no longer possible, then you have to consider a new way of exhausting responsibility. If you find that you cannot correct the condition at its source any longer, then your problem is to perform a penance. Now, this penance is usually a good deed, something constructive, something valuable, something important, an experience which you dedicate to the memory of your past mistake. In other words, supposing when you were working along that you were not too thoughtful of your children. And then as a result of that, they were alienated and you feel that their futures were damaged in some way. If you can no longer have any influence on this situation, if you cannot correct it in itself, if you cannot change the lives that grew up under the influence of your mistake, then you have the penance problem. And that is to perform an action equivalent in every way that you can possibly work it out, by which you perform a good deed for someone who is here now, that you perform in the memory of your personal mistake in the past, a very
battery low,
as a form of penance. This type of action is often very valuable. I know that a person came to me who regretted deeply that they had neglected their parents. It became quite a fixation in the mind of this person. They realized that they had failed in the duty of a child to a parent. The parents are now long gone. There's nothing they can do about that. But they can take into their lives and hearts some person, a neglected parent, and be a good friend to them. Try to give to someone else the love that you failed to give long ago to a person in your life. Try to find a way to make amends and dedicate this amendment to the memory of the person you have previously wronged and neglected. Penance is important inasmuch as it has a tendency to pay a debt. It makes it possible to fulfill in another generation an act of kindness that you failed to commit at some previous time. All of this type of situation has a very therapeutic effect, namely that you have to find some way of atonement, and that atonement is to do or perform an act that will compensate for the mistake that was made. This is something that we can all do if we really want to seriously enough. Another phase of this problem is the effect of these destructive memories upon our present associations. A family in which one person is linked tightly to an old grief or an old tragedy suffers on and on because that person is no longer able to function in a happy, normal, proper way today. Therefore, old memories can very often damage people who are no way involved in them.
Oh, my God. I always tell people, you know, in order to clear your karma or to balance, you know, because we're in the energy space of Maya, you know what I mean? Balancing. And it's happening again on a cosmic level. So I love what he's saying because a lot of us feel guilty for how we probably treated someone who probably loved us or whatever, right? But to do good deeds, you guys, very important.
But simply suffer from your repentance. Under such conditions, a personal thoughtfulness comes into focus. If we were sorry we damaged someone long ago, we cannot help this today. But if we continue to damage people because of our previous circumstance, then we are perpetuating a situation that should not exist. In other words, we should not take out upon the living
the experiences that we bring forward from unhappy early factors or circumstances. If, therefore, your view, your psychic self-destruction syndrome is continuing to function, to burden a new home, to burden children today, to incapacitate the individual for social adjustments, this is simply perpetuating a condition which exists only in our own minds. Somewhere along the line, nearly everyone has to do a mental and emotional house cleaning job. They have to put their houses of memory in order, or else they will be burdened with spooks and ghosts that will wander the ramparts of their minds like the ghost of Hamlet's father wandered on the ramparts of Elsinore. With the ghosts are the problems. The ghosts are the things that just do not die. They are what is left when the circumstance itself no longer exists. We have to be very careful and thoughtful about ghosts. They can do us constant and continuing damage. So if we are suffering from ghostly memories that haunt us, if we are suffering from remembrances that we cannot live out or cannot get over, then we have to go to work today and immediately upon our own inner lives, our own natures. There is no use seeking for escape mechanisms or, for that matter, of defense mechanisms. One of the most common defense mechanism is the individual trying to prove to himself that someone else was to blame for the mistake he made. He may not believe it, but he still tries to prove it. He still tries to rationalize his previous action to vindicate himself. This is seldom very helpful because it represents an attempt to evade a head-on factual relationship with the inner life that we possess. An escape mechanism may often follow as other persons who will try by artificial means to forget. There are many cases, for instance, of alcoholism and narcotic addictions. There are many cases in which tranquilizers and various pacifying and hypnotic drugs are used to help the individual to get over an intense melancholia or something of this nature. All of these are useless. They have no way of touching the fact. The moment we sober up, the memory is still there. And therefore, this attempt to escape by scientific or medical escape mechanisms generally does no permanent good. We have to head into the situation itself. We have to find ways in which we can make right any wrong that is still within our capacity to correct. Incidentally, in remembering all of the past disasters that affect us and worry us, we have a tendency to gradually submerge the better things of life. We become so attached to this gloom that many marvelous experiences, many wonderful opportunities to grow and become enriched are either overlooked or ignored. We continue to think only of the particular problem that we faced at the moment. In one case that I know, a family had a young son. The young man was delicate, not very healthy, and rather timid, and not at all aggressive. The parents considered it merely to be a character defect. Until one day, the young man keeled over, and it was diagnosed as infantile diabetes. The young man died. The parents never recovered from the shock because they felt the guilt of not having recognized the true circumstances. They should have done this. They should have done that. They should not have been so critical. They should not have blamed the young man for being lazy or being tired because he was sick. All of this lingered on as a very sad memory. It was something that actually these persons did not commit this act from any intent to be unloyal or to neglect the boy. It was simply a case that they did not know, but they blamed themselves for not trying harder to find out. Now, this type of blame bothered and worried and depressed the family for a number of years, until a distant relative who they had very little contact with passed on suddenly and left the child almost the same age as the boy who passed away. The family took this child and turned their attention to giving it every thought, care, and love and sincere interest that they were no longer able to give to their own boy. This was the best type of atonement. This was the best type of penance. And it gradually not only helped to heal the wound, but conforming with the natural impulses of affection, they gradually helped to guide this other child into a useful and practical career. So here was an example of making right a wrong in the only way it could be corrected. If they had gone on through life blaming themselves to the end, they would have been in serious difficulties. As it happens, they did, to a measure, blame themselves to the end. They never forgot. But the sting was removed. The tremendous pressure was taken up by concentrating attention upon another person who was in great need of their help and understanding.
Powerful.
These are ways in which we perform penances for misdeeds or mistakes of the past. And there are a great many cases of reclamation in these areas. The individual, having become aware of a guilt mechanism, immediately turns to some constructive way of solving the problem. And this is what we nearly always have to do where we have some kind of a negative memory situation. Another important problem in this is, of course, that memory is most dangerous to the isolated. The individual living alone retires still further into themselves. Memory is also most dangerous at night, where sleeplessness may contribute to a long memory pattern repeated many, many times. Therefore, where memory is hard to control, new things to remember must be brought into focus. The individual must develop a larger area of personal interest. They must not have the time to continue to remember their previous mistakes. And instead of that, they should be preparing for future victories, which are in a way related to the mistakes, because from the mistakes came the impulse to do something better, to try to advance a cause that would make life useful and give them a sense of victory over previous faults or shortcomings. Therefore, wherever a person has a nostalgia on some part of their own career, they should try very desperately to keep active, constructively active, taking an interest in matters which are for the common good, and to get over a personal injury or sorrow as a result of an impersonal service to some larger field of activity. If the person who has a tendency to psychic self-reproach can begin to build things they are proud of, can suddenly realize that they can be useful and can do things well to take the places of the mistakes they made, this often results in a very favorable change in their general psychic outlook. nearly all people who are heavily conscience-ridden are to a measure religious people. They are therefore the ones who reproach themselves the most because they believe they have violated the morals and integrities of their faith. They see themselves as backsliders, as fallen souls who have failed to keep faith with truth. It should be remembered, however, that a thoughtful reading of the New Testament tells us beyond any doubt in the world that the entire theory of religion is a theory of redemption, that it is not part of the plan of God or the Christian faith or any other faith, that an individual should destroy himself as a result of mistakes that he has made. It is also pointed out that in the theory of redemption, it is part of the Christian doctrine that Christ becomes the personification of the redeeming power in nature, the power that dies for the sin of the world. And this proves in a certain way, at least to the religious, that sin is forgivable, that sin is something that is overcome by virtue of the divine spirit and the divine principle that abides within us. Therefore, it is useful for us to call upon the forgiving power of God in ourselves when we are mentally or emotionally disturbed by our own mistakes. Now, there are various kinds of mistakes that we have to think about. Some are due to ulterior motives. These are very largely mistakes for which we are responsible. But on the other hand, ulterior motives to a person growing up in our world, these ulterior motives have become so standardized, so generally accepted, so almost inevitable, that the individual is frequently moved to an unfortunate relationship by the pressure of self-survival or the advancement of the personal career. This type of self-centeredness may lie behind a great many of the most unfortunate situations that can arise in our careers. If we look back and realize that basically our problem was selfishness, that we were interested only in our own well-being, that we sacrificed others to the advancement of our own purposes, and that we were, in some instances, actually dishonest in order to advance our careers. If we look back and find these types of problems in the background of things, then we should make every possible effort to establish a higher standard of integrity now. Where we fail to do this, and continue to nurse the attitudes that long ago caused us to do things we repent, we will just do more things to repent until life becomes too complicated and our own mistakes begin to catch up with us. Also, it is very important in generally thinking about self-censure to make sure that that self-censure is justified. Now, in most cases, it's probably easy to make a case that it is justified. But there are forms of self-censure that arise from circumstances beyond our control. They arise also from mistakes which are almost natural to us. A case in point on this is a family in which the parents refuse to permit a child to marry a member of a different religion. They, the parents, were perfectly sincere in this. Yet they made a desperate mistake and ruined the child's life. And there was never from that time much beside melancholia in the child. Heartbroken, they lost the one opportunity that they believed would have brought them a happy life. Now, these parents were not evil. They were not individuals who wanted to hurt the child. They were people, however, who were so dominated by a religious point of view, by the particular faith or sect or creed to which they belong, that they began to think in terms that to marry outside of that faith was a mortal sin. And they were trying to save the child from sin. The whole situation was typically the intensity of devotion to what these parents believed to be the truth. Now, we can bring this type of thinking right on down to the present times. We realize that in many instances, sectarianism is contrary to the actual teachings of Christ. Sectarianism certainly does not recognize the words of the Master when he said, "Other sheep have I which are not of this fold." The obedience to the sectarian limitations can lead not only to desperate situations in personal and home life, but this definite, desperate, fanatical limitation of attitude is responsible for some of the worst wars in history. No one meant to be wrong. Now, if you have to look back on this situation, and you say to yourself simply that you did the best you knew, the best you believed, that actually it was a heartbreak for you even at the time to do what you did, but you felt it a moral, spiritual obligation on the situations of this kind, you can only look back and regret the attitude or the circumstance. But from the point of view of when it occurred, you are not committing an evil action as far as you knew. You are only true to some principle that you believe in. It may be that 50 years later you don't believe in that principle quite that way anymore. Perhaps if you had it to do over again, you would tell the child to go and marry the person they cared for and give your blessing. But the reason for your present attitude is very largely motivated by your reflections upon the previous incident. From a perspective of years, you realize the damage. But at the moment, you were trying to do what was right. Now, this applies to a great many situations in which individuals try to do what is right. Well, one of the mistakes that is most commonly made is that we really are trying to get someone else to do what we believe to be right. Instead of using rightness to integrate our own inner lives, we attempt to spread it over other people's experiences. This can cause a lot of trouble. The individual faced with decisions must always take a little time for thoughtfulness. They should count 10 and very slowly in order to decide what course to take. They have to be able to ponder, meditate, and consider before they commit its very definite action influencing other people. There are a great many parents, for instance, who decide what the children's loyalties ought to be. The parents may decide that the child's loyalty should be to them as parents, that the child should always obey them, that the child should always be available to take care of them, that the child should make all the necessary adjustments to meet the demands of their elders. This often leads to a serious break in the family relationships. The children simply leave home. The parents are crushed because instead of taking care of the controlling and disciplining of their own lives, they try to transfer this responsibility to the life of another person. This almost always ends in trouble. One of the classic experiences in this field, of course, is the story of Santa Monica, wonderful person whose experiences resulted in canonization. She was a Christian woman married to a non-Christian, a pagan. She tried tried to convert him because it was a moral responsibility to convert him. But he didn't convert. He remained for many years very much in his own way of thinking. Then for the court virtue for which he was later canonized, Santa Monica decided that that was not the way. Instead of trying to change his religion, it was wiser, better, and more proper that she should so live her own religion that he would see it in action. And as a result of thereby being a very beautiful, gentle, kindly soul, exemplifying all of the best qualities of her religion as she believed it and understood it, she lived to see her husband converted. Not by nagging him, not by fussing him, not by scolding him, but by proving the value of her own faith. Now, this is the type of thing that people don't generally do much about. They decide what someone else should believe, and then they expect them to believe it. And the very faith which they are trying to sell may have brought practically no happiness or peace to the persons themselves. This is a very common cause of long-seated tragedy. I know one case in which a conversion program of this kind between two people who are otherwise admirably suited to each other continued without a let-up for over 40 years. Both persons stood their ground to the bitter end, and the situation was solved only by death. Now, this type of thing results in great misery. Both of the persons in these cases, in this particular case, both were neurotics, hopelessly involved, desperately dominated by this sense that it was their moral duty to change someone else. If most of the problems of your life have been the result of trying to change other people, then perhaps it is timely to think about putting yourself in order. If you want someone to live better than they are living, give them an example. Do it yourself. Now, it may not do any particular good. Maybe they won't see it even after that. But at least you will then have lived your own beliefs sincerely and fully and non-competitively. If we believe in one God, we cannot factually and honestly believe that in this great world in which we live, all sincere members of all faiths do not enjoy the same divine protections. Now, prejudices of one kind or another also play an important part in disagreements and in sorrows and misfortunes. Imagination, perhaps, is even more important than prejudice. Some of the worst problems we have are imaginary. And in various domestic relationships and family situations, we have to be careful that we do not create the situation that we later find impossible. Imagination can bring doubt, fear, anxiety. It can cause the individual to be jealous and envious. It can break a home through gossip. All kinds of tragedies arise from the individual who is not able to face situations, but takes them into their inner lives, moods and broods, imagining the worst. If you imagine the worst long enough, it will happen. Imagination can cause an individual to expand, exaggerate, intensify all types of negative attitudes and conditions. If imagination produces circumstantial evidence, the individual should sit down very quietly, think it through, and find ways, if possible, to disprove the rumors rather than to justify them by imagination. Sometimes the rumors may be true. Under such conditions, the only answer is to face the truth. Most of neurosis is a result of not facing into problems as they arise. In one way or another, we eat them ourselves and develop a psychic indigestion as a result. To meet this type of thing, therefore, before it gets large, nip it in the bud. Go after it and try to solve it before deep hurts become inevitable. Honesty also plays a large part in this psychic problem. How far is honesty honest? To what degree can honesty be applied to situations? I think if honesty is applied with kindness, it can be applied to nearly any situation. It is where honesty is involved in bitterness and reproach before the facts come in. Then it is no virtue. We can honestly say that we do not like something, but we must also honestly find out whether the circumstances are what we think they are. Honesty in general, however, shortens a tragedy of any kind, making it more obvious, leaving less tendency for years of self-reproach, because self-reproach very often is the result of swallowing grievances and not allowing them to have proper ventilation in common action. Most people interested in the better things of life, the higher ideals and principles which we hold very dear, would like to overcome negative attitudes of a destructive nature. But in order to overcome these attitudes, religion, mysticism, idealism, higher philosophical thought, ethics, morality, and culture, all of these demand their right to have a part in our daily activity. Too many people have gone to religion because of despondency. They have nothing left to live for. They can't get along in society, and they are unadjusted or maladjusted. Therefore, they turn to religion for consolation. This is basically not a good pattern. We should turn to religion and hope and strength, and not to nurse wounds. In daily practice, therefore, our problems of making new mistakes will result when we have a religion and do not follow it. If we believe in the law of karma, we know there are things we should not do. But I know more people who believe in karma who are making new karma every day that is no good than you can possibly count. They believe that they're going to have to pay for their mistakes or for their selfishness or for their arrogance or for their cruelty. But this does not reduce the tendency to have these characteristics. Well, if a person looking back over a long life finds that for many years they have made similar mistakes and suffered accordingly, that they resent always the consequences of action, but not the action itself, then the little self-thoughtfulness is indicated. Most people don't object to doing wrong. They object to getting caught. And when they get caught, it all seems very unfair. And also, they may develop an intense dislike for the person who catches them. It is not themselves they blame, but the results or consequences returning again to the person who causes them. This being so, we have to begin to think in terms of an idealism that causes us to change conduct. Conduct is a very difficult thing to approach because it is so internal. We can see what's the matter with everyone else, but in ourselves, our conduct seems so reasonable. It seems so consistent. It seems as though it's always telling us to do exactly what we really wanted to do. and as a result of that, it is hard to discipline it. All life grows on discipline. Memory must be disciplined just as much as any other part of man's composite constitution. Memory must be taught what to remember, and it must always be taught to investigate a situation or a memory and find what is good in it. It may be that there is no good in it as far that we can justify our own action, but there is good in it that perhaps it has helped us to become better people and bring happiness or security to many lives as the result of one mistake that we made. But the disciplining of the mind does not result easily from merely not using the mind. We cannot simply say to ourselves, I will forget this. It doesn't work that way. Our friends can all tell us to forget it, but they never forgot anything either. So in the face of this general failure, we must accept that the mind has a reason for being with us. The mind was given to us that we might be historians of our own conduct. The mind has been given to us so that we can reflect upon the consequences of action. And also, it has been given to us in order that we can plan to improve the total composite of our natures. The Pythagorean discipline brought in a very important phase, namely that it is the duty of the mind to plan the day before we live it. Instead of waiting for all kinds of things to happen and then trying to intellectualize them, we should start with the mind's giving us a proper program. At the present time, in national and international affairs, we're bogged down for lack of straight thinking. We are unable to face an emergency until it happens, and then we do not know what to do about it. And the mind wanders around in a sea of opinions and notions. A life must be planned as a national destiny must be planned. And the Pythagoreans advise that each morning the individual should take 5 or 10 minutes and plan his day. He should decide exactly how he is going to live that day. He is going to think about the unfinished business which must come into today from yesterday. He's going to decide what to do before something hits him in the face. He is going to think in terms of priorities. What is the most important thing he must do this day, today? What are the responsibilities that must be met this day? And what will be the penalties by procrastination or by failure to make a clear decision? The mind must set up the day. If it does this, and we follow its instructions, we will find that we save energy, save time, and preserve a certain mental equilibrium. Nothing happens that must be reacted to desperately. And desperation is probably one of the greatest causes of tragedy in the world. Planning the day gives us the wisdom, gives us a program to follow. It gives us a certain number of things to do that need doing and the order of their priorities. It gives us also the ability to move from one situation to another without confusion. We do not have to hesitate, wonder, doubt whether we are or should do a certain thing. The next point that perhaps the Pythagoreans gave us that is vital is the retrospective exercising. What do we remember at the end of the day? What did we do with the day? Are we proud of it? Has it been a day that we can accept with a good memory? Or is it something we wish we could forget even before the night comes on? Is it a day of harassments? And if so, what were they and why were they? Do they represent really things that happened on the outside or only reactions to them? Was your bad day the result of the fact that you got up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning? Was it a matter of being irritated all day long? Was that irritation due to a family dispute or too heavy a breakfast? What was the cause of the fact that you went through a bad day? In most instances, if you sit down carefully and think of it, you are the cause. It's not what happened to you, it's what you did about it that made a bad day. So retrospection helps us to recognize the relationships between ourselves and the various circumstances that we face during the day. It may show us, for instance, to be rather too selfish or too self-centered. It may show that we are too extravagant, we've gone into debt. It may show that we also were too harsh, too critical, too unpleasant in our relationships with those around us. In other words, it was a bad day because of the acidity in our own psychic integration. If we can face this, analyze it, study it, think about it, we will come much more quickly to the full understanding of what we have to do in order to correct these situations. We get out of our minds forever that the world is terrible. It is difficult. It is tragic. But each individual has the power within himself to understand the things that are happening and to discover what the wise have known since the beginning of time, that in this universal plan, all things ultimately work together for good. Good is something that has to be earned. And we are too interested in being happy to consider the importance of being virtuous. Also, the retrospective exercise reveals what may be called the stream of conduct. It tells us the natural reactions which we seem to have. It shows us the lack of self-discipline. It shows us the faults that are most likely to give us future trouble. And, of course, also the brittleness by which we create animosities and antagonisms. So to think it through is to get a picture of ourselves. And if the picture isn't what we like, then we have the privilege of doing something about it. If we do not do something about it, when one of these days in the future, we're going to have a bad memory. We're going to have something we regret. We will regret as long as our personal conduct is unethical. We will regret as long as we do not obey the primary doctrine of religion, love one another. We are going to regret as long as we cannot forgive. And while we cannot forget, we can internally forgive the circumstances that appear to be unjust or unreasonable. We live in a world in which nothing works better than the Sermon on the Mount, but it is a very hard doctrine to follow. But without some guidance of this kind, we are never going to get over the problem of bad memories and things that hurt us and remind us of past faults and failings. Among the tragedies of life, probably there is no group of tragedies that are more intense in human relationships, and those are domestic. The average person setting up a home is irresponsible because they do it at a time of life when they have little or no practical experience. They have not the judgment, they have not the vision, they have not the insight. They are moved very largely by the natural processes of nature by which the establishment and perpetuation of the species becomes of the greatest importance. But young people starting out and trying to form homes do so from an almost complete lack of experience. They depend almost entirely upon the background of their own family lives. They are influenced only by the examples of their elders. Now we have a new group of disillusioned that constitute a kind of sophisticated peer group in which young people getting together discuss their own faults, failings, emergencies, and misfortunes. But altogether, the establishment of a domestic pattern is essential to the success of human life. Where it is neglected or abused, there is always trouble. Now, when confronted with this type of thing, mistakes are almost inevitable. Very often, first marriages fail simply through lack of understanding and insight. No one really wanted to be wrong, but no one knew how to be right. Under such conditions, the establishment of family depends upon certain basic characteristics of the human being. Normal, natural, proper human beings are very easy to work with as long as they are not conditioned and adversely dominated by circumstances. The average young person building a home has to realize that the primary virtue, which we mostly think of in terms of love, is that love is unselfish. Love that is gratification of self-interest is not love. And if a person really loves, they then think of the other person first. But too many human beings are primarily in love with themselves and never get over it. So affection, where it is constantly dominated by the gratification of personal desires, nearly always falls apart. And when this happens, it's sometimes a serious tragedy. Somebody is hurt. Someone is seriously unhappy. How to solve this problem has become a social issue of great moment everywhere. But the truth of the matter is very simple, namely that selfishness is always penalized. Selfishness is the exploitation of other people. Selfishness is the pushing of oneself forward at the expense of their environments or their family associations. Self-interest is probably the greatest single fault of humanity today. And brought up in it, raised by it, surrounded by it, with all the friends and relatives suffering from the same elements, it is very hard for young people to start out. I know a number of cases in which an early broken home became a basis of an entire lifetime of self-reproach. Very often the self-reproach is not the correct answer. They have reproached themselves not for the real cause, but for some small emergency that arose. For instance, a violent argument was blamed for a separation. But it was not the real cause. The real cause was right back again in selfishness. The large generality is the inability of people to forget themselves long enough to think honestly about others. So the marriage is broken up, and the parties both go away with bitterness because of the fact that it gradually built into a series of animosities. But behind these animosities were false basic concepts. And these basic concepts simply could not work. It seems to me that in every educational system that we have, there should be greater emphasis upon home planning and the various social responsibilities of individuals living under a democratic system of government. What we have to do in order to assure any permanence is that the individual is willing to give up attitudes of his own when he expects to share a life with someone else. Life is a sharing. It is not an endless battle for domination. It is not a constant defense against domination. This type of situation simply indicates that people not only are adolescent when they start out in a family relationship, but remain adolescent to the end. And I know not long ago there was trouble in one of our retirement communities where they have these little trailer homes. The neighbors all got together and petitioned to have a certain member of that colony asked to leave because they fought morning and night. All day long, there was nothing but screaming and shouting between these two people. And the joyful, wonderful part of it was they had been married nearly 50 years, and the situation had been that way from the beginning. Now, this type of thing is for something that we can do something about if we want to. Once it's become chronic, it is difficult to change it. But if it had been worked on intelligently at the beginning, they could have had a very happy life together. Sometimes we reach the point in which unhappiness seems to be necessary to us. We must have something so that we can have self-pity. And this is another factor. The many people enlarge and magnify disasters because it gives them a certain attitude or glamour of martyrdom. They are putting up with things, and this becomes a virtue, but it is foolish. All of this type of situation leads ultimately to neurotic negative patterns. So if we want to try to get over these mental blocks that seem to be especially frequent in confused social situations, we have to simply take upon ourselves the realization that life is an experience. Life is a series of incidents which we meet and control, or we meet and are defeated by these incidents. We are here to go through experiences. If we make mistakes, and we will, these mistakes constitute a common heritage. Everyone makes them. But some people, having made them, never get over them. Others, having made them, rise above them. One man whom I know who is particularly an example of getting over a mistake is an ex-convict, a man who was really was in prison for years for grand theft. Coming out of prison, he has completely revised his life. He is now an honest and honored citizen, and he has never made any effort to conceal the fact that he was in prison. But he learned something. He could have been crushed, destroyed. He could have ended an alcoholic or on skid row, but he didn't. He realized his mistake and went to work to correct it. He educated himself, became very skilled, and is an individual who is now well-respected with a good family and with everything that came out of a prison sentence. Because he was resolved to correct in himself the idea that it was possible to get something for nothing in this world. These kinds of experiences, therefore, help us to grow. But we may say, what about the people whom we have injured in these efforts to grow? The law of karma is very interesting. We injure someone, and what is their reaction to it? The only reaction to an injury that is constructive is to transmute it in ourselves. The only way that we can really end an injury or prevent ourselves from suffering from an injury is to have an insight great enough to understand the situation. The moment we begin to think in terms of forgiving the evils that are done to us, we are also growing. And the people we injure also have to face the experiences of living. They have injured someone along the way. We all have. So the injury that we give them is also very often the basis of the best growth they will ever receive. But they have to rise above the thing we did to them. And we have to rise above the things they did to us. It is to become capable of interpreting experience as growth rather than as tragedy. And we all have to learn to do it. We all have to realize that we have injured others, but that in many cases that injury has become the basis of growth for them, even as what they did to us has become the basis of a new philosophy of life for us. And in the grand scheme of things, the individual seeking internal light may be driven to the development of his own psychic and soul resources by the things that are done to him. Just as what we do hurt him, so he in turn, passing through the experience of hurt, rises above it and in turn forgives someone who has been in his mind with a grudge for a long time. The interrelations of life are chemical and alchemical, but the only solution to all of them is that hatred as a factor in life must simply cease. And it can only cease when we understand the integrities of nature. The universe, whether we like it or not, is just. It is not only just, but it is all-wise. And it is in all love that these things happen. We do not recognize this. We cannot see the glory and wonders of God in an earthquake or a tidal wave. Nor can we find the inevitable experiences of life according to a divine plan on a battlefield. But actually, nothing dies. Nothing ceases. All things change. No one can destroy anyone else. The only thing they can really do is impede their own growth, limit themselves, and burden their lives with sad or despondent memories. The pattern for us is always the same. We are not the victims of what happens. We are the victims of what we do about it. We are not lost to forever because of disasters, physical or psychological. We do not end life here any more than we can hope to carry worldly ambitions into a better state. When we pass out of here, we are going to take with us unfinished business. And the most important of this unfinished business is perhaps our own mistakes. We will carry them with us until we solve them. The sooner we solve them, the sooner we will be free from them. Every mistake evaded will be cause of further trouble. Every mistake understood, honestly repented, with proper effort to make a constructive contribution in the place of the mistake we made. If we keep thinking in these terms, we will be too busy making better contributions to get so completely bound up in the past. The past is gone. The only thing it survives is experience. And the only value of experience is its redeeming power in personal conduct. Experience is the thing by which we grow. It is nature's way of teaching us all the good way of life and the proper approach to all situations. Experience means that in the end, we shall all end in a natural fraternity. All living things as members of one family one humanity, one creation, must sometime come to an amicable relationship. They must become cooperative, they must become kindly, they must become friendly and unselfish. Until those times come, we will be in the same difficulties. And while we cannot guarantee that human society will make these discoveries in the immediate future, we know that as the result of personal disaster, sadness, sorrow, trouble in our own lives, that we can learn the reason for these difficulties and correct them through the renovation of conduct. These things we can do. We may not be able to change others, but we can change ourselves for the better every day, and in so doing, ensure the full destiny of ourselves. The recognition of our place in the universal plan is constantly recorded within our own spiritual entities. It is there. It is part of the growth of the soul. The soul sometimes grows in pain and suffering. The soul is sometimes a being of sorrow. But the soul is always learning, always loving, always teaching, always leading us into a fuller and more constructive relationship with life. If, therefore, we are able to release this, if we can release the good in ourselves, we can understand our own mistakes and find that they are blessings in disguise. Everything will work well if the individual does not descend into self-pity. Instead of being sorry for ourselves, we should rejoice at the opportunity that a mistake gives to do something better. A mistake is an opportunity that has been lost along the way, but it will come back. All mistakes come back. The only things that do not come back are solved problems. So the mistake that we made fits us or equips us to meet the next recurrence of a similar problem, so that the next time we do it better. And if every mistake results in a determination to do it better in the future, we will become so busy doing it better that we will not have much time left for regrets. Regrets will not help. But the lessons they teach us can prevent us from repeating the same mistake. And in the spirit of growth, in the spirit of integrity, in the spirit of trying to be better people, we pay our debts to nature. We've all incurred them, and we must all pay them. But when we become wiser, we pay them better. And instead of depending upon further outbursts of emotion to clear the atmosphere, we realize that a quiet determination not to make the same mistake again is probably the greatest and most important byproduct of misfortune. There is nothing to be gained by this problem of allowing ourselves to downgrade ourselves. We may not be proud of everything we do, we won't be. But there is no reason of going or wandering around, I'm no good, I'm no good, I'm worthless. Nothing is no good. Nothing is worthless. There is not a blade of grass that is worthless. Everything has its values. We should not downgrade ourselves. We should simply recognize that we have not given our worth an opportunity to express itself. We are not unable to grow. It's simply that we haven't taken advantage of the opportunities that are natural to our kind. There is no such a thing as a worthless creature or a worthless creation. Everything is worth because it is necessary. And the whole problem of life is to recognize discipline and accept it, recognize integrities and live them, recognize the rights of others and respect them, and recognize the rulership of the supreme power over all of the conduct of mortals and of all nature. we would not have problems if they were not necessary. We have minds, and because we have minds, we have to learn to use these minds. The proper use of the mind relieves us from practically all of the burdens of thinking. The misuse of the mind perpetuates these burdens indefinitely. Consequently, the mind must grow up. We must teach it. It sounds funny that the mind can teach itself, but it can. And it might get, becomes particularly alive and vibrant and worthwhile when it is tied strongly to our aspirations, our convictions, our ideals, and we are allowing it to express the soul qualities locked within our own natures. Behind the worst sinner and inside of it, the worst sinner, is the potential of the greatest saint. For in each individual is deity, enthroned eternally. And if we allow this deity an opportunity, if we have a religion which encourages us to release the good, we can gradually rise above the temptations and pressures that lead to disaster. We have to recognize that the only way that free will or free mind power can function is that it gives us a right to make decisions. If this decision is wrong, if these faculties are allowed to be used negatively, if the mind and the thinking go to seed, this is not because they have to. It is because we do not use the abilities that we have to train the mind and the emotions to serve the principles that we know basically to be true. It is not that the mind is wrong. It is that the mind is an instrument. It is an instrument of consciousness. It is an instrument of soul power. It is an instrument of the inner divinity. If we tie it to our selfishness, it will wreck us. If we tie it to our ethics and our principles, it can become the most powerful constructive force we know. And to release the mind from the negatives, it must have positives. We must convert the mind to the fact that it was not created for worry and repentance. It was created for thought, for wisdom, for the gaining of skills, and the strengthening of integrities. If we get busy doing the things we ought to do, we will soon find that we can more than compensate in life for any mistakes that we have made. Mistakes are incidental. Correct action is basic and real and is proper to our natures. We all make some mistakes, but we do some things fairly well. And the more we do well, the fewer the mistakes. And the gradual disciplining of our personal living so that we can daily plan a constructive program will more than justify the fact that we had to learn this by suffering. We seem to be most open to constructive suggestion when we hurt somewhere. We are most appreciative of principles when we discover the tragedy of trying to live without them. And that in itself is the big lesson. And in the world in which we live and in the times in which we live, we are all in great need of this big lesson, the lesson that tells us that the proper use of the instruments that have been so magnificently bestowed upon us, the proper use of these instruments is rewarded with peace of mind and psychic and spiritual growth. And the misuse, which is up to us, the source of our pain and suffering. Therefore, if we get started immediately using these faculties, especially memory, wisely and lovingly, we will soon find that the old wounds will be healed, and we will find the tragedies of the past, the powers that move us to the fulfillment of a better destiny. Well, I guess that's it, folks.
All right, guys. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. you know, change of thoughts, change of life. Perspective is going to be a very important key when it comes to this guy's. Manly P. Hall is the author of that book. The video credit is in the show notes, guys. Please join me tomorrow for part two in Ascension Symptoms. There's a lot going on on Earth, on this realm that we're on now, guys, and it's very important to be in the know, right? So I'm going to share a perspective on Ascension Symptoms. It's the second part of the series that I've been doing. This and also Book of the Month, which I introduced today as we approach spring, is something that I'm going to be doing going forth. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. And if you need to contact me for any reason, please do so, utilizing my email, enhancingawarenessradio@gmail.com. If you want to add anything to that, or if you have an idea, please contact me. And until next time, guys.
I got a fine peace of mind. I know they're not recording. I got a fine peace of mind. See, this is what that voice in your head says when you try to get peace of mind. I got a fine peace of mind. I got a fine peace of mind. He says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. Says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. He says there's no me without him. Please help me forget about him. He takes all my energy, trapped in my memory, constantly holding me, constantly holding me. Need to tell you all the pain he's caused. I need to tell you why I'm undone because he says it's impossible, but I know it's possible. He says it's impossible without him, but I know it's possible to finally be in love and know the real meaning of a lasting relationship, not based on ownership. I trust every part of you, 'cause all that you say you do, you love me despite myself. Sometimes I fight myself. I just can't believe that you would have anything to do with someone so insecure, someone so immature. Oh, you inspire me to be the higher me. You make my desire pure. I can't find a word to say. Please don't be mad with me. I have no identity. All that I've known is gone. All I was building on. I want to walk with you. How do I talk to you? Touch my mouth with your hands. Touch my mouth. I'm
Yeah.